Let us bow our heads together in prayer before the message. Holy One, let us mean the words that we say. May the words of from my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, our Rock, our Emmanuel, our Redeemer. Amen. So to open our worship this morning, we heard the hymn that traditionally begins Advent, O come Emmanuel. That word Emmanuel is found twice in Isaiah and once in the book of Matthew. And in Hebrew, the word literally means God is with us, or God with us. And in the passage in Isaiah, one of those times it appears in the Hebrew Testament, we find the beginning of the thread that begins the journey through Advent. We go way back in history for a little history lesson to a time when the kingdoms of Israel and Judah were separate. Israel and Syria besieged Jerusalem to force King Ahaz of Judah to join them in fighting another great power, war again, to the northeast. Another empire called not Syria, but Assyria. King Ahaz turned to Assyria for help, and together they defeated Syria and Israel. And Judah became the vassal state of its ally. So this is the history that actually occurred in that area, in that time. And then we pick up the biblical text, the words of Isaiah, in which God instructs the prophet to tell the king that God will destroy Judah's enemies and God will give a sign. And the sign will be this, the birth of a child, and the child's mother will call it Emmanuel, God with us. And by the time that infant learns to reject the bad and choose the good, is old enough to know right from wrong, he will be eating curds and honey, and the kingdom of Israel and Syria will be destroyed. Just as we share the stories of Mary and the Magi and the manger, the stories like this one in Isaiah would have been shared by the people who lived in this time of Jesus. Touchstone stories, origin stories, stories to promote cohesion among the people of the covenant. This is where the biblical Advent Christmas threads that we weave into a rug begin. Now, when my sister was in medical school, she studied the human body and everything about it. She crammed as much as she could about our biology and its coherent component systems and how they all fit together. And then she sat exams to show the extent of her understanding of what she had learned. You know, not once in medical school, now mind you, this was a while ago, but not once in medical school was the connection made between mental health and physical health, or between spiritual health and physical health. Nutrition didn't get mentioned once. When I was in seminary, and again, it was a long time ago, we spent a lot of hours studying the scriptures, as you can imagine. And it was mostly an academic exercise. Seminary followed the rules of university of ingesting lectures, writing papers on that ingestion, and then sitting exams on what we had learnt to show that we had eaten well. Now, I'm sure this has changed. In fact, I know it has. But in my time in seminary, not once did we sit in contemplation. Not once did we explore God as a personal experience. Not once did we explore any sense of Emmanuel as God with us that took us outside of the borders of the geographic and ethnographic confines of the biblical narrative. And now, into my sixth decade on the planet, and my third decade in ministry, I very much question the usefulness of such an education. I began this journey into ministry with a God with us experience, and I probably bored you with it once or twice. There was nothing in seminary that drew on or explored my experience or that of the others who were with me there. And so I waded through papers and stumbled through doctrines, waiting, quite frankly, for insight to break through crumbling academic ivory. It has only been through experience, searingly personal experience, and equal remarkable shared experience, that I have any notion of God with us, of Emmanuel. I could be the greatest biblical scholar and be useless as a spiritual companion. I could know all there is about Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the Sadducees and the Pharisees, the Dead Sea Scrolls, the prophets, and be entirely at sea when it comes to sharing with any conviction the comfort and the conviction of Emmanuel. God is with us. So other than a little history lesson and maybe another few nuggets through this sermon, I'm not going to spend a great deal of time on the context of these writings. What was happening when the prophet Isaiah wrote the words Matthew read for us this morning? What was happening or why he wrote the words he did? Time is short, and I only have your attention for a short while. Equally, I'm not going to spend time on the prevalence of apocalyptic writings, the end times that we hear in the passage I read from Mark. These echo the words of Daniel. That was their time and place. That was their understanding. This is ours, yours and mine. So I want to instead spend our time exploring this experience of waiting. What are we waiting for? Now, we're doing a heck of a lot of waiting in this time of COVID, waiting to hear what the new rules are, waiting to hear about vaccines, waiting to find out if our jobs are no longer there with closed businesses and enforced shutdowns, waiting to hear if we can visit those we love, waiting to sit by the bedside of those who are dying, waiting to hear if our surgeries are put off or our treatments postponed. Waiting, canceling weddings and rites of passage, waiting to hear how long those of us who work in the nursing area and the caring area, how long are we required to wear all this PPE and travel by TTC with those not wearing PPE? And waiting students and their parents and their teachers, how long will this go on? How long must we wait? And because I am a parent, and I come from parents who were teachers and professors, I want to pose a question, because sometimes that's the only way. Me telling you things is not going to help. What can we learn from this time of waiting? What can we learn from marking this time of waiting in this Advent season of the church in this time of pandemic? For Isaiah, the waiting was again to find favor again with God. There was the exile in Babylon, the destruction of the temple was evidence of God not with us, of God being absent, of God hiding, of God turning God's face away. In Mark, the answer to the waiting is found in the end times, in the culmination of history, finding a resolution full of angels and falling stars and the terror of being asleep and not included as one of the elect when the Son of Man comes in clouds with great power and glory. Stay awake while you wait. Now, both of these ways, quite frankly, both of these ways of waiting are terrifying. And yet both of these ways of understanding the waiting are understandable. Who among us has not cried out with Isaiah, and in this time, where are you, God? Why me? Why the suffering? Why the hate? Why the hurt? Why the isolation? And who among us has not taken refuge in casting about for determinations of who is elect? Who will be awake and who will be asleep? Who will be judged worthy when the Son of Man comes in glory and in power? When we feel we have no control over our lives, we cast about for those to blame. We cast about maybe against those who are making the rules. We look for conspiracies. We seek out half-baked answers with little knowledge. We cast about for comfort in facile theories and fake prophets. Stay awake doesn't mean that. So the question again, what are you waiting for? And the answer is gestation. On one level, we are waiting for a birth. We are waiting for the pageant play to unfold in our story and in our lives. We are compressing the 9 months it takes to brew a child into 4 weeks. We are waiting with expectation to hear the familiar chapters in this story as if yet again for the first time. And this may sound rather strange to you, but we are not the only ones waiting. Mary and Joseph are not the only ones waiting. God is also waiting. Waiting for us to recognize our participation in that gestation. Waiting for us to recognize God with us. In every day of this waiting time, when you can, visit and revisit, confirm and reconfirm, seek and sit, pray and ponder, this God is waiting for us to know Emmanuel. In our tradition, and there's other ways of getting there, in our tradition, we find this in the ordinary miracle of the birth of a child, the one mentioned in Emmanuel as God, in Matthew as God with us. Begin there. Begin with the conviction. To help out with this in this community over this Advent, we will be offering daily musings by ministers and congregations to your inbox, and a time of centering prayer with Jason and Chaba, a former Jesuit priest of our community. And Jason will talk about them more in the announcements. So the question again, what are we waiting for? And the answer is, molding. We learn like clay that is gradually molded. We learn like clay that is gradually molded by the potter, the shape of that Emmanuel conviction in our lives. For me, it is absolutely impossible for God not to be with us, for God not to be present. Any God with us experience I have heard related or had on my own or with others makes this fact. At a bedside, at a birth, in the middle of a forest, in the middle of a crowd, in the middle of worship. The connection is fact. The suffering is also fact. The joy is also fact. And God is as well. God is with us, not causing the suffering or turning away in times of despair or hiding from us. God just is with us. Just Emmanuel. You will see on the front of the bulletin for this week a painting that our own Vera Taylor has painted. A scene of McGill Square with the church and a Christmas tree and a mother and child in the foreground. She has a suitcase beside her as she sits on the bench at the front on Queen Street. And the tagline is, "Comfort, my people," taken from the words of Isaiah. And you can read this line in two ways, depending on whether you put in a comma or not. The first is with, comfort my people. This is a declaration, an assurance. God is saying, be comforted. This is the hope nurtured by this Emmanuel conviction and shaped over the course of our lifetimes by the potter. The second, with the comma, is comfort my people. This is a plea, a commandment, a way forward, the actions that will move you toward that hope nurtured by that Emmanuel conviction and shaped by the potter. The first is the worship experience at its finest, and the second is the invitation of welcome and warmth, of food and dignity offered to the mother and the child on the bench outside. Emmanuel. Amen.